time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Do 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 do.
Welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And our show is brought to you by two wonderful sponsors, starlights.com, that's starlights.com, where you will find all kinds of wonderful New Age things, books and CDs and DVDs and all kinds of things like candles and lanterns and I actually remember what else is on there. There's a whole bunch of stuff, incense and ways to heal yourself and wonderful sayings and yeah, all kinds of stuff. So check it out. And also by alternativecancer.us, where they have, over 1,000 pages now of information on how to deal with cancer naturally. And they have test kits, so you can test which kind of treatment will work better for you. The test kit is an applied kinesiology kit, though. That's muscle testing. So if you're familiar with that and you are proficient with testing yourself, then you can do it yourself. If you are not, it's going to take two people. So please keep that in mind if you order the test kit. And that can save you a lot of time, money, and grief, because your body never lies. So, you know, it's kind of handy to be able to take a little test kit, figure out what's going to work better for you. And there are lots of pages there that give you the newest and latest treatments for things and give you the pros and cons of, you know, why you would want to do one treatment over another, and lots of support. So whether it's you that has cancer or someone that you care about, you might want to check that out. Again, that's alternativecancer.us. Okay, tonight, my special guest is Dr. Carl Helvey, and Carl's been on the show before, and he is someone dear to my heart because he was a nurse, and he understands what it's like to be in the jaws of the lion, so to speak, and have to force other people into those same jaws, and a lot of us get smart at some point and go, there's got to be more to things than that. So welcome to the show, Dr. Helvey.
Thank you, Dr. Valerie. I'm happy to be with you.
Oh, it's great. I'm just so looking forward to this. It's been a few years since we've chatted. So first of all, why don't you start with your bio, you know, talk about yourself a little bit, and then let's catch up on what you've been up to and the new book and all that kind of stuff.
Well, as Dr. Valerie said, I'm a nurse. And I have a doctorate in public health from Johns Hopkins, very traditional. But I'm no longer in that traditional path. I've been a nurse for 60 years, and one of the highlights of my career was developing a nursing theory that I refined over about 30 years that's used in about 8 countries. And another highlight was obtaining a big grant for almost $1 million from the Division of Nursing and starting a nursing clinic for homeless and low-income individuals and families. And I'm also a 39-year lung cancer survivor who was given 6 months to live by traditional medicine. And so I decided that I didn't want to be debilitated for that 6 months, so I used all natural interventions, and 39 years later, I'm still here going strong.
And, you know, it's good that you wrote a book about it because, you know, you've been there, done that, and so people should listen to you because you obviously know what you're talking about. It's not some pie-in-the-sky stuff, and you know, lung cancer is one of those things that even with conventional treatments, most lung cancers can be survivable, but a lot of them still aren't. And, you know, I mean, if you can do something naturally and not go through the devastation of having your immune system killed off and, you know, thereby taking away pretty much any chance you have of surviving, I think that's a better way to go. But then I am slightly prejudiced.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people have no idea. I mean, you know, they get scared, you know. They hear the word, the big C word, you know, being used by their doctor, and it totally freaks them out, and, you know, they go into shock. And even those of us who do this as a living, we have the same reaction, don't we? I mean, how did you feel when you got your diagnosis?
Actually, Dr. Valerie, I didn't feel too bad because I didn't have symptoms, but I had a dream that told me to go for a chest X-ray. And I believe that God speaks with us sometimes through dreams, sometimes intuition, sometimes through other people, if we listen. And so I went, but one of the hard parts was convincing my conservative physician to give me an X-ray when I didn't have any symptoms, because at that time you had to go through your primary doctor for anything. And so he kept asking if I had symptoms, and I kept saying no, but I want an X-ray, and finally he relented, and then they found the spot and asked me to come for a biopsy. And then the surgeon came with the doctor to tell me that it was lung cancer, and they were doing surgery and chemo. Now, that was frightening.
Yeah.
And I said, wait a minute, I don't make snap decisions. I go home, I think about it, I pray about it, I make a rational decision. And they said, well, you'll be dead in 6 months. And I said, well, that's my responsibility. Your responsibility is to tell me the pros and cons of surgery, the pros and cons of chemotherapy, and my responsibility is to make the decision. And they kept saying, but you'll be dead in 6 months. And I kept saying, that's fine, as long as I make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember of being too upset. I think my family was more upset than I was, because I felt very comfortable that if God led me in this direction, that it wasn't just to die, that, you know, something would come of it, and it did. So
yeah,
I think it's more frightening.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I think it's more frightening to people that do not have a strong faith in something beyond themselves.
Right, and don't have the dream or the intuition, or like I have angels speaking to me out of the air. I'm like, oh, really? Hmm.
That's great, because I call on my angels all the time, too, and they're always helping me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they kind of have taken more of a hands-off approach with me over the last couple of years, and I was kind of upset about that for a while. And then I realized, oh, no, wait a minute. It's like when you have a little kid and you're teaching him to ride a bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after a while, you're not hanging on to the bicycle and keeping it upright anymore, and you step back and you kind of let him go.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of gave me that visual, and I went, okay, but I'm kind of like used to you guys talking to me. Yeah, I don't know how comfortable I am that, you know, I ask you questions and nothing happens. It's like, wait a minute. But every once in a while, they surprise me, you know.
I tested mine, Dr. Valerie, because I had just read an article that we all have angels, and they like to be called on, and it helps them, and they like to be thanked, et cetera. And so Hurricane Irene was coming, and I had lived in this house through Hurricane Isabel, where I had 3 feet of water through the house. And so I thought, oh, I don't want to go through all that again, because everything got moldy on the first floor, and I had to have the wallboard taken out. And so I thought, well, I'm going to test this out. And so the water is up 2 bricks up my house, and one more brick it would have been in. And I open the door, and I'm motioning, and I'm saying, come on, my angels, pull this water back. I know you can do it. I've gone through this before. I don't want to go through it again. And I just kept talking with my angels, and the water never came any higher. And so the next day, When the water got about 3 feet from the house, I started the same process, and the water never came any closer. And yet my neighbors on both sides flooded, and their houses were further back from mine.
Wow.
And so I, about 3 or 4 weeks later, I was out walking. I walk every morning about 6:30, 7 o'clock, and I have to walk through some woods to get to the beach that I go to. There's a beach right by my house, but then there's another beach that you go through the woods to get down to it. And I'd forgotten to put the mosquito repellent on. I use eucalyptus and lemon, I think it is, and it keeps them off, but I forgot to put it on, and the mosquitoes are bothering me. And I thought, well, if the angels could keep the water out of my house, they certainly can keep these little mosquitoes off. And so I asked my angels to keep the mosquitoes off, and guess what? I didn't have any problems with the mosquitoes. So I call on them, you know, every day, and I thank them every day. You know, I call on the angels to help with any negative things that I have sent out over the last 24 hours. Every day I have a little affirmation like that. And then I start my day giving them permission to protect me and enfold me and guide me, etc. So I believe in using every resource that's available, and the angels are certainly a very important one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I thank them every night, and I also pray to the Divine Creator to allow my angels to have greater influence in my life. And it's been really interesting, because I usually have things going bump in the night in my house, you know, and all kinds of strange things come through. And lately, since I started doing that, asking for blessings for them, then I've seen a couple fights right over my bed. And I can't see exactly what it is yet, but I've seen, like, you know, a huge darker-than-dark thing over my bed, and I call in the angels, and all of a sudden the light comes, and there's this, like, globs fighting, you know, over my bed, and I'm watching all this and going, wow, okay, now I can go to sleep. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff going on out there, and I keep saying, you know, God, I really would rather see what's sneaking up on me. I know it's scary looking. You know, I'd rather see it completely rather than go, wonder how bad that black blob is. Because, I mean, there's all kinds of
things. Live in a three-story house, and I went out on the balcony on the third floor. This was the beginning of a week ago. And what do you think I saw on the balcony? Now, how this thing got up there, I'll never know. When you say things that appear, there was a snake that was about 3 feet long.
Wow.
And maybe 2-inch diameter.
Holy
and it was
cow.
Just sitting there, sunning. Mm-hmm. First, I thought it was a branch, and then I thought, well, there's no trees up this high. I mean, because this is the third floor of my house. And, you know, there's a wraparound balcony on two sides on the second and third floor, but this thing is just sitting there. So I went downstairs, and I got the mop that is one of those squeezy mops.
Mm-hmm.
And I just quick pushed, and it flew off the deck because I was afraid of it. I didn't know what else to do with it. But, you know, I sometimes have strange things come to my house, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's really wild. And, you know, I mean, there's the normal 3D stuff, and like snakes. And then there's other things that, you know, you're not quite sure what they are, and they morph in from another dimension. And, I mean, it sounds like it's crazy. But there's so many people out there experiencing this kind of stuff now. And what I know is that a lot of this stuff is now attacking. And so, like, when people tell me, well, I don't know how I got something, I'm like, hey, you're speaking to the choir, because I just went through some weirdness in the last couple of years. It's like, how did that even happen? You know, and it's like, wow, you know. And I knew at one point, I knew it was kind of an attack from the darkness. And I was like, okay, you know, now they got my attention. And so I, you know, took care of it. It's been a constant work. But, you know, I'm seeing people now who are getting strange things. Nobody can diagnose them. Nothing's working. They don't know what's going on. So I was trying to explain to one of my patients the other day, and you know, the patient was kind of upset, you know, how come my doctor screwed up, how come they didn't know this, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, you can't really blame them because nothing's working the way it used to work, and it's going to get worse. So, you know, you just keep yourself in balance the best that you can and just understand that you have to hit it from every angle now. And I know that you didn't just hit it from one angle when you got your diagnosis. You hit it from a lot of different angles.
Right, right. Right.
And, you know, and the thing, oh, let me ask you, too. I've forgotten. I know you told me this before, but it's been a couple of years. Now, what led up to the lung cancer? Were you a smoker?
Right.
Just
yeah.
Yeah.
About 89% is directly related to smoking, and then there's another 3% that's secondary smoke. So if it's lung cancer, you can, well, you know, there are people that are exposed to radon and asbestos, some other things that cause lung cancer, but the majority is smoking.
Well, and the thing, too, that I run across a lot is grief. And so, you know, because lungs are the repository of grief in the Chinese medicine system. And so if you, if you're a smoker and you're exposed to radon and molds and things, like in your house when you got flooded, and and you're dealing with some grief that doesn't seem to want to go away, then that's what I would say is the perfect recipe to get lung cancer. And so, you know, as a physician, I'll deal with it from all of those aspects. You know, get somebody to detox and you know, stop smoking, of course. Of course, I tried. I had one that was really bad and, you know, they were four-pack-a-day smokers, her and her husband both, and they just refused. And the doctor gave her 2 days to live and said, you better stay here and get treated. And she came to see me, and then as soon as they heard that they had to quit smoking, it was like, well, we're not going to do that. I just kind of went, okay, go away. Yeah, something
Well,
else.
I went to my 60th high school reunion 2 or 3 years ago, and there was a classmate that came, and he had lung cancer, and he's smoking.
Ugh.
And I tried to approach him and talk about it, but he didn't want to listen. His wife, his first wife had died of lung cancer. His second wife died of lung cancer.
Wow.
And I think he died within 3 months after the reunion. But he refused to stop smoking, and here he is dying of lung cancer.
Yeah, see, that's kind of crazy behavior. I mean, in my opinion, because, you know, I mean, we all have a certain exit point anyway, or serval, and we get to make the choice. You know, I've been near death 6 times, so I know we get to make a choice. So you can come back from these devastating, supposedly terminal diagnoses, but you have to hit it, you know, you hit it full force. You can't, like, keep smoking if you have lung cancer. And, you know, I hear those stories and I go, wow, you know? Like, why don't you tell people, what did you do to get rid of your lung cancer? How did you heal?
Well, I went to a physician in Vienna, Virginia, and he had worked at the National Cancer Institute and had so much success with Laetril that when the government closed him, he continued doing it in his private practice in Vienna, Virginia, and I had to sign forms that I wouldn't report him, but I found out that within 5 years after the Virginia Medical Association took his license, and I've always felt very bad and hoped and prayed that he found something that was as rewarding to him as this was, because this guy was a very brave guy to continue helping people and saving lives when he was in danger from the government and from the medical association.
Sure.
But he prescribed the physical aspect, so he told me to take 2,000 milligram of Laetril daily. The pancreatic enzymes, I took Wobimogus and a couple other pancreatic enzymes. I took high doses of vitamin A. It scared me. I was taking something like 300,000 milligram a day for a week, and then 200,000 for a week, and then I went to 50,000. for a year. Mm-hmm. And I took a very high doses of vitamin E. I took a variety of vitamin Bs. I took digestive aids. I was on a diet that was very similar to a vegan diet today. It was 75% raw fruit and vegetables with some additional cooked. I could have grains. I could have nuts. No peanuts because they're a high source of protein. I could have no protein. So no dairy, no chicken, meat, none of that. No simple carbohydrates, so no cakes, pies, candy, none of the things that I used to consider the good stuff. And then I added on my own mental and spiritual things like a prayer, meditation, visualization, affirmation. I tried to work on being a little more patient because I'm very impatient. I still am, so I didn't get too far with that one, but try to be forgiving, try to serve others, and just do a variety of the physical, mental, spiritual activities. And I still follow it pretty closely, and I think maybe that's why I never had a recurrence, because it's been, as I say, 39 years now this month. And I never had a recurrence, but I don't eat meat. I do eat some chicken. I eat a little bit of fish. And I've also eat organic, which was not a problem back 38, 39 years ago because the food supply was not polluted. Mm-hmm. We didn't have genetically modified organisms. We didn't have growth hormones and all of that. And so you didn't have to worry about that. But I do eat organic or locally grown if I know the farming practices of the person that I'm buying from. Mm-hmm. And I don't take chemicals, or I rarely. I might once every 5 years take a Tylenol or something like that. Or if I get an infection, I haven't learned yet the natural things to use, but I usually learn a natural thing to deal with whatever health problems come along. And so I think that one of the keys to staying healthy is not to take the drugs and the chemicals and all. So when the doctor gives me a diagnosis and a prescription, I usually throw it away and I find what natural things can I use to, take care of the problem. And I do take a lot of supplements yet. Those have changed, since I had the lung cancer, but I still periodically will take maybe 1,000 milligram for a couple months, maybe every couple of years of the Laetrile, because the theory was that it's a deficiency, and so I figured that it's probably good as a preventive to take this periodically. And then, you're always adding new, recently I got tired and something told me to look up coenzyme Q10, and I looked it up and it said it was for energy, and I thought, well, maybe that's what I need. And so I started taking that about a week ago, and I'm finding that I don't have to have my afternoon nap anymore, because I usually sleep about 7 hours at night, and then I was taking an hour nap. But since I've taken this, I don't seem to need that nap in the afternoon.
Yeah, well, the CoQ10 works on a bunch of different things. It's heavy on the immune system.
And oh, is it?
Yeah. It basically increases phagocytosis by 2.5 times. Mm-hmm. And so it boosts your immune system without increasing the amount of your white blood cells. And that's really important in cases of cancer, Uh-huh. And so it's really good for that. It's also pretty much diagnostic for heart disease. So I would say, you might want to check out your heart because CoQ10 is very, very heart protective, and it protects in transplant cases as well and in heart cases because it protects against reperfusion injury. And for the listeners who aren't familiar with medical stuff, that just basically means, if the perfusion or the flow of the blood is cut off for an amount of time, then restored, then there's a lot of tissue damage that can happen because of the fact that it was missing and, you know, the body started to die there, the cells started to die and released a lot of toxins and things as they were dying and, you know, went into the low oxygen state. And so then when you send new blood in, it kind of tears things up, basically. And so CoQ10 protects against reperfusion injury, which is fabulous stuff, you know, for transplants and things. So it's really good for that, really good for the immune system. Actually has some amazing things that it does. But the first thing I do, if somebody comes in and they're worried about whether they're going to have a heart attack, is I give them a couple CoQ10. And if they immediately feel better, I go, you need an EKG, and you probably need an echo.
Now, do people take this indefinitely?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Do they?
In fact, I've had people who had mitral valve disease, and one lady was so bad she couldn't even be operated on, and she was had her eighth child. So here she is with the, you know, the eighth child's a newborn. She's got all these little kids running around, and her she had four valves that were in bad shape, and they all needed to be replaced. So four valves in your heart are screwing up, not allowing you to have proper blood flow. So the doctor said, we can't even operate on you because you're so bad. He said, go home and try to rest. And I'm thinking, well, that's a dumb thing to say to a Mormon mother that's got eight kids and one of them's a newborn, you know. But anyway, they sent her home, and I said, listen, you need to be on CoQ10. So we got her on 400 milligrams of CoQ10, 100 milligrams four times a day. And in a month, she went back, and they said, oh, my God. They said, we don't know what you've been doing, but you don't need the surgery anymore. And within a couple months after that, they said, wow, we don't know what you've been doing, but you know what? You're fully insurable now. Mm. And so they, I mean, totally reversed this.
And she was taking two a day?
She was taking four a day of 100 milligrams.
Yeah,
and then my little niece was born with a hole in her heart.
Oh.
And so she was in neonatal intensive care. She was born about 4 months premature. And so the first thing I did with my sister-in-law was I said, you need to get that kid on CoQ10. So I had her mixing it into her food, into her bottles, and you know, everything else. And within a year, that hole healed up completely, and they kept thinking they were going to have to go in and repair it. And, you know, now she out-hikes the other kids.
Great. That's
good. So it's fabulous stuff, yeah. So, but that's, like I said, very diagnostic for heart problems.
The other thing I've taken for my immune system is colostrum.
And
I was taking that for my prostate because most men, as you know, when they get to be about 55, have a problem. And I got to 75 before I had a problem, but I think it was because I ate so many fruit and vegetables.
Oh, sure,
because they say that delays it. And so then when I started getting up every hour during the night, the doctor said, well, he'd put me on Flomax, and I said, well, I'd rather use herbs. And he said, that's fine, because Flomax is not going to cure it. It's just going to make you more comfortable because you won't have to get up so often. So I use a variety of herbs, but at one point the naturopathic doctor suggested the colostrum, but it also is very good for my immune system.
Well, now they use transfer factors, which is what they take out of the colostrum. And the other thing, too, is I found that most of the time when guys come to me with prostate problems, it's because they have too much aromatase enzyme. So you use an aromatase inhibitor, which is broccoli essence, and it's known in the supplement industry as indole-3-carbinol, and then the further variation of it, you know, that you want to take that to get is diazolmethane, and, you know, so we use that kind of stuff, too, and, you know, there are so many things that we can do with natural supplements, which, of course, is why everybody around the world, all the governments are trying to outlaw natural supplements now so people can't heal themselves. And, I mean, you know, things like when you're talking about your lungs, you need high doses of vitamin C as a smoker. Well, they have just written a thing into the Codex Alimentarius now. They lowered the RDA of vitamin C from 60 milligrams down to, I think they said 40, which is
nothing.
Yeah, they lowered it. So this is absolutely ridiculous. ridiculous. It'll do nothing for you. So now if you want to get, when this comes into full force, if you want to get vitamin C, even at 40 milligrams, you're going to have to go pay for a doctor's appointment and get a prescription and then go pay like, you know, $100 for 40 milligram tablets of vitamin C. This is outrageous and evil.
Right.
And unbelievable. Right. You know, when when in reality you can protect your lungs with vitamin C and with N-acetylcysteine. So, you know, the answers are out there. I mean, you're a living example of that. 39-year survivor of lung cancer.
Nettle is something else that she gave me for my prostate, but it also helps my lungs. I never, almost never have any phlegm anymore in my lungs since I've been taking the nettle.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's wonderful, and there's so many wonderful herbs that, you know, you wonder why people get into the whole thing with the drugs that have so many side effects.
Yeah, they don't know any better. See, they don't realize that when you go to a doctor, he's got like 5 minutes to diagnose you and give you something, and then he's got to leave. So they're going to write something out. They're going to say, okay, what's the problem? What are your symptoms? And you tell them, and they go, here, take this. And you take that, and then you pop up with a bunch of side effects, and you go back, and you go, well, doc, now I have this. Okay, fine, take this. And they keep piling on medications to take care of the side effects from the previous medication. Meanwhile, it's building up so many toxins in the body, it's unbelievable, and impinging on not only the immune system, but every part of your body. And, you know, people are being chemically poisoned, and they have no idea. And I can't tell you how many times as a nurse, you know, I did home health nursing for quite some time. I'd walk into somebody's house and I'd see them on 20 medications. And I'd be going, your doctor doesn't have a flying leap idea of what the heck is wrong with you. And I would say, you should be on like 2 medications max. 20 medications means your doctor's an idiot. Fire him. Go find somebody new. Get yourself off all this crap. And I said, unless you're a transplant patient, you got too many medications. And, oh, man, people got well so quickly after that. But, you know, I mean, when you take something that's as serious as cancer, and you consider now with all the radiation that's going on from Fukushima, which, by the way, hasn't gone away, it's getting worse.
Right.
But, you
right.
know, you've got all that. You've got the GMOs that nobody knows what it's doing to our bodies and, you know, what's actually going to happen to people. And you've got, you know, not enough of the correct minerals in the food because the soils have been poisoned now with aluminum and barium and all this other crap that they're raining down on us from the skies in their weather war programs. And, you know, you look at all that and you go, wow, you know, there's got to be some way to help people before it's too late. And so many more people are getting cancer now. And, you know, the first thing I do is tell people, okay, calm down. First of all, we all produce cancer cells all the time. Constantly. But your immune system is supposed to kill them and get rid of them. If it doesn't, then let's go back and let's trace why. In your case, smoking. And, you know, whatever else was going on in your life at the time. And so you start removing those things that are the causative factors. That's how a naturopath works, you know. Go back, remove the cause, and then poof, the body miraculously heals itself. Imagine that. So, you know, when you do this, no matter what form of cancer it is, then you got a step up, you know, above all these drugs and everything else. And the other thing they don't tell people, they've known for at least 50 years, that chemotherapy causes secondary and tertiary cancers. So you take it to get rid of the one cancer, and a couple years down the line, you've got a worse cancer. And if you manage to get rid of that one with the stronger chemotherapy, then you're going to get a third cancer that nobody's going to be able to stop. So, you know, this is one reason why I really wanted you to come and talk about your story and how you got past it, because I've seen too much of this stuff. You know, I worked mostly ER and ICU and then home health. And I saw this progression. And some of these people, because I, you know, I lived in Las Vegas for a long time, so I saw these people. You know, I treated them when they came through the ER or through ICU. And then years later, I was in home health going to their homes, you know. And then pretty soon, I was in home hospice going to do the hospice thing with these people and looking at them and going, wow, you know, how is it you didn't get a clue over all these years? And, you know, a lot of them were still smoking.
Right.
And still eating
right.
crap.
And there was research that came out recently that chemo spreads cancer. That's mm-hmm. one of the first times that I've seen something in print about it. But
well, it makes sense.
The other thing that bugs me is that with the traditional treatment for cancer, they usually don't do anything about diet. They just, like my brother, he came down with lung cancer last fall. He was 91 years old.
Wow.
Last spring, he's chopping wood. They were square dancing. He had a garden. He grew all his own fruit and vegetables. I mean, he was so active, so healthy, no problems at all. Well, he came down with lung cancer. The doctor wanted him to do radiation. Mm-hmm. I knew it wouldn't help, but I didn't want to interfere with the relationship. So I asked him, I said, well, will you take the Laetril along with the radiation? And he said, yes, he would, because he said, you know what you're talking about. So his memory had gotten so bad that he forgot it most of the time, so he didn't take it very much.
Mm.
But they gave him 5 days a week, 5 weeks of radiation, a 91-year-old.
Oh, brother.
And they told him, eat whatever you want. If you want donuts, you want ice cream, you want candy, you want cake, anything you want, eat it. Well, that's the worst thing you mm-hmm. can take as far yeah. as a diet with lung cancer. And then at the same time, they're destroying his immune system. He lost 65 pounds in that 5 weeks. He got bed sores because there was no fat. The bone was rubbing the skin. He had no energy. Then he couldn't walk. They put him in hospice, and within 2 weeks he died. And so, and my niece is telling me that they told him he could have donuts, that he could have ice cream and all this stuff. And I said to her, well, you know, that's not very good food for him, but, you know.
It's really tough when it's your family. You know, my brother's
right
now in the terminal stages of a glioma, you know, the bad tumor in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And he would not listen to me. And mm-hmm. I tried. I told him, listen, I have never seen an oncologist that had less than a $5 million house unless they were just
mm-hmm.
starting out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my MD friends said, you're absolutely right. They make more money than anybody else. I said, I know. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I used to refuse to do it when I was nursing. And I wouldn't do it in the hospital. I wouldn't give him chemotherapy and home health. None of that. And they tried to force me. I said, no, it's murder for money. I'm not going to do it. I don't care
right.
if they want it. It disturbs
mm-hmm.
me too much. I'm not going to be mm-hmm. part of that. And, you know, so here I had to watch my brother go through the radiation, the surgery, and the chemo, 2 years of chemotherapy,
mm-hmm.
and three surgeries, and the tumor grew back worse each time
mm-hmm.
and faster. You know, the first time it took a couple months. The second time it took, I think, a week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And the third time they went, oh, my God, we can't do anything else.
Yeah.
So I just kind of sat back and went, well, you know, you wouldn't let me help you. And I realized it's your trip, you know, it's your life. You do whatever you want.
Right.
But I said, you know, this is
right.
killing me. You know, to sit here and watch you go through this when I told you at the beginning there's no chance. And
right,
these guys
right.
told him that they had a 40% success rate. I said, they are lying through their teeth.
They told him 40%?
40%, right. I said, they're lying. They have a 0% success rate. Zero. Look it up. You know,
right.
Search the Internet.
Well,
you will see.
I usually say they have 2% if it's stage 4. But
you know, this they couldn't even stage it. They said it was somewhere, you know, at least stage 3, maybe stage 4, but... You know, I've looked at it, and I said, you know, that's it, man. You know, they're lying to you. And, you know, they bought it, hook, line, and sinker. I said, listen, this is what they're going to do to you. They're going to scare the crap out of you. You're going to think this is the best chance that you've got, and it's not. And then I shut up after that. I was like, I told them what I had to tell them that was the truth, and I'm like, I don't want to make this a self-fulfilling prophecy. And
right.
so I said, you know, you can beat this. You really can. And I just gave them as much support as I could, and... You know, he did the diet and everything, but he still continued to let him do all this chemo and radiation to him. So it's like, well,
I think my family have a different picture now, but as I say, my brother went through this, and his wife, I felt very sorry for her because she's 88.
Oh, man.
They were married as soon as she graduated from high school. They were married 70-some years.
Oh, my gosh.
And I know she's lost without him, but, you know, she, in a month, she sold the house, moved to assisted living, knew she couldn't live on her own, got sold, had an auction, sold her possessions, kept what she needed for her, you know, small apartment, and is trying to move on with her life. But it, you know, it's not just the patient that suffers, it's the family that suffers too. And
yeah.
I just do not understand how this continues to go on and on and on, and people continue to fall for the chemo, surgery, radiation.
Yeah, I know. It's, well, you know, I have patients come to me and say, what would you do? And I tell them, don't ask me what I would do. I'm not you. You're not
mm-hmm.
me. And if they keep pressing me, I go, I would never let them give me chemo. Nor
mm-hmm.
would I let them do radiation.
Yeah.
You know, it's bad mm-hmm. enough when you have to get a diagnostic x-ray, but it's like, treat me that way? Hell no. Absolutely not. And, you know, but I have to tell them the party line. It's like, okay, look, I have to tell you this. I have to tell you that the standard of practice says you need chemo and radiation and surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but what you want to do is up to you. And then they start asking me, what would you do? I'm like, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'd never do any of that stuff, and none of those oncologists will do that stuff either.
Mm-mm.
See, that's
no.
the telling thing that people don't realize. The oncologists will not do that themselves because they know. And so I just kind of sit here and shake my head and go, you know, this has been known for over 50 years. How are they still getting away with this?
I know.
Unbelievable.
The other thing that's a problem is that insurance will not pay for any of the alternative.
Right.
And so that puts a lot of people in a bind, too, because it does cost to go for alternative. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a catch-22, I think, because you have people like Dr. Forsythe that wrote the chapter in my book. He's having stage 4, 5-year survival, 46%, compared mm-hmm. to about 2%
yeah.
for traditional. So he's having fantastic results. But, you know, if you don't have money and you don't, and your insurance won't pay for it, you know, then you either sell your house or you go with traditional. So I think that, again, is a problem.
That's a big
with
factor.
The system.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's what happened with my brother because they had a special fund where he lives to take care
mm-hmm.
of the firemen that were, there. A lot of them are getting this.
Oh, are they?
And, yeah, it's because they're breathing in these toxins all the time, even though they wear masks. He said, well, you know, we wear masks
mm-hmm.
when we're fighting a fire, but he said we go from a car fire to a factory fire to a house fire
mm-hmm.
to a
mm-hmm.
carpet store fire. And he said, you know, when we take out our turnout coats and stuff when we're done with the fire, he said we hang them inside the vehicle, and then we drive off breathing the stuff as it's outgassing.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, you know, somebody should change that because that's really a bad idea. And so he said, well, you know, we kind of have to go with the insurance because, you know, I mean, that's the only way they'll pay.
Right.
So, you know, I feel for him. You know, I called
right.
around to some of the natural treatment centers, and they wanted so much money up front, cash on the line, that they're like, well, we can't do this. I mean, you know, you're talking $60,000. You know, it's
right.
like, what? And I said, well, I'll help you as much as I can. They're like, no, we don't want to do that. And I went, okay. But,
well,
you know.
I talked with someone locally, that a nurse also, and she had investigated going to the Oasis of Hope in Mexico, and she told me it was $25,000 for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't sure what she was going to do. She said she'd have to sell her house in order to do it, but she felt that her life was more important than a house. And I haven't talked with her to see what she did do, but, you know, that is costly. And as I say,
mm-hmm.
the insurance, you pay into your insurance all the time, and then when you need it, it's not going to help you with what
Right, because it's not there to help you in the first place.
Alternative.
Yeah, it's not there to help you in the first place. Insurance is a game, you know.
It's
gambling.
Right.
That's all that is.
Right.
So, yeah, before we get too far here, we're almost done with the hour. Please tell people where they can get your books and all of the books that you have for sale. The one that I've got posted is, Surviving Lung Cancer, which I think is a very valuable guide for a lot of people. But go ahead and tell them about the other books, too.
Okay. The You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions is available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and on my website, beatlungcancer.net. And on my website, I have the endorsements. I have all of the shows that I have done, the interviews that I've done that I've gotten the links for. I have some reviews that I've gotten that people did in different magazines. I have another book called Healthy Holistic Aging, which is what you interviewed me on last time. That was in 2007, I think.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And it's about how you stay healthy throughout life using a holistic approach. And then most of my other books are textbooks. One, I did one on the homeless worldwide, comparing 7 countries in terms of incidence, prevalence, the resources that were available from the governments, from non-profits, et cetera. That's my most expensive book. They didn't sell many of them, and so there weren't many of them available. And I think the last time I looked, Amazon had that book for $180. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I should have bought a bunch of these and held them back.
Yeah.
And then I have a book on advanced practice nursing in the community, which was probably the best-selling book that I have of all the books that I've written, which took my nursing theory and applied it to a specific community and used the theory, but used it in relation to the nursing process. So it did an assessment, planning, implementing, and evaluation using the theory. And that one has been I've done very well on that one. And that one is the one that is used in at least 8 countries that I know of, and
cool.
has been used for research as a research framework in Taiwan and used in several doctoral programs in this country. So, you know, I've moved around from area to area, so I don't know what my next one will be on, but I'm sure there'll be another one.
Well, I'm sure there will be, too. You're very good at what you're putting together, and I got to tell you, Dr. Helvey, it's always a pleasure to speak with you and to read your books, because you do make it very easy for people to read. You know, they're not dry and boring books, for one thing, and you manage to make it interesting and still impart pretty good amounts of information, which is really important. No, you're welcome. You deserve it.
My next project is I'm in the process of setting up a holistic cancer foundation because I get concerned that people need treatments and they don't have the money for it. And so I'm in the process of setting that up, and I've gotten the articles of incorporation have been accepted by the state, and my board is meeting on Wednesday to go over the bylaws, and once we make any changes that we need to in those, then that will go to the federal government. It'll probably take about 8 to 10 months to get that approved, and then I will hopefully have money. I had a painting that was quite valuable, and I put it in auction. They've had the painting for about 4 years, authenticating it, and it went to auction about 3 weeks ago, and it didn't meet the minimum, which was a hefty minimum.
No, I bet.
And so they think that it will sell at the post-auction sales. It was a discovered Edward Hopper that was unknown previously.
Wow.
And so that money will go into the foundation once it's sold. So I'm hoping to have money that I can at least, you know, have a start to help people somewhat with some
of the finances. I should put you in touch with my practice manager and her partner. He's the guy that has the alternativecancer.us site.
Oh,
because they've got quite a resource, and they deal with lots of cancer patients that are looking for alternative means. So maybe
great.
You guys could cook something up together. I'll mm-hmm. have to give her your number, and let's see what could come of that. Who knows?
Great. Yeah.
And you know, we do a lot of energetic stuff, energy treatments.
Good.
And we're looking at all kinds of different things, to combat this stuff in different ways, since the old stuff's not working so well anymore.
Right. Right.
So we'll see what happens, but you're doing great, and I think if anybody needs a reason to quit smoking, they should read your book. If they're going, I don't know. I've been trying to get my sister to quit for years, and she just sneers at me, and I'm like, okay, at least take 2.5 times more vitamin C than the normal person needs, so, about 4 grams a day should do
right.
it. And
but it's not easy. I mean, it's very difficult. It's one of the most addictive things, I think. I mean, I didn't have trouble giving up most anything, but that was one of the most difficult, I think.
Yeah, see, I've never been attracted to that, but that's because my mother was a chain smoker, 4 packs
mm-hmm.
a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always hated it. I think it's noxious. But it's just, it's kind of funny because I look back and I look at all these things. I've seen people in all stages, you do when you're a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And you see them, beginning to go into it. And what I discovered a while ago is when somebody gets lung cancer, you can smell it on them. It just rolls
right.
out of their pores.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this really awful kind of rank smell that they get. And I've been at the airport, and I saw this one young guy that was a baseball player in the minor leagues, and I said, you need to have made that your last cigarette, dude. And I didn't tell him that he had lung cancer, but I was like, you really need to quit smoking, or, you've got all these wonderful things coming up, and you're going to miss them if you don't quit. And he goes, my girlfriend's going to love that, when I tell her about this, because she keeps telling me I need to quit. And I'm thinking, I could tell this guy was going to go downhill really quick if he didn't quit.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah. But
well, you know how I started smoking? It was when I was in nursing school. Now, this does not say much for nursing.
No.
But I trained initially in a 3-year diploma program, and we were used for service in the
mm-hmm.
hospital.
Yep.
And so it was, if you sat down and had a cup of coffee, they would come and get you to help
mm-hmm.
them turn a patient or something.
Mm-hmm.
But if you sat down with coffee and a cigarette, they wouldn't bother you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started, there were 30-some people in my class, and only 2 people smoked. And by the end, there was only 1 person that didn't smoke, because we all learned that the only way you got to rest during the day was to sit down with a cigarette and a cup of coffee. And so that's how we all got hooked on smoking.
And, they used to allow smoking at nurses' stations and everything, and
mm-hmm.
and they used to let the patients smoke in the rooms. And when I was first out of nursing school, they used to tell me, so-and-so down in that room wants to smoke. And I'd go, send one of the smokers. I'm not going to go sit there and help them. And when I became an RN, it was a lot different than being an aide, because, I'd walk in and half of the aides and most of the RNs would be smoking. And I'd go, you got the report on the tape recorder. I'll come back in. I'll just cover the floor while you guys are in here listening to report. I'll come back later because I'm not going to sit here. And they you know, snuffed out their cigarettes really quick when I said that. They're like, oh, no, you know, we're, no, we'll open the door, we'll get the smoke out. And I was like, man, you know, the last thing I want to do is sit in a little tiny enclosed room while everybody's puffing away.
Right.
Like, ugh.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, everybody's got their vices, and, you know, right. I have my own stuff, I guess, but at least not like that. But anyway, thank you so much for being on the show, and we're at the end. Boy, the hour went really fast. Have to have you on again. And I hope people
will... thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. I hope people
will... thank you very, very much. It's been great touching bases again.
Yeah, and I hope people will take this conversation to heart and get your books and start to learn, you know, how to get out of these fixes that they're getting themselves into, because stuff's not working like it used to, so they better start working at it right now.
Right.
So anyway.
And, you know, it's going to younger ages. I've got a man that I'm working with now. He's 45 years old, a disabled veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And he's using, he's following the same protocol that I used. And we've had to make some changes because, like, the Wobimogus that I used, pancreatic enzyme, is no longer available. So we had to find something that was comparable.
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff that's changed and been banned and things like that. And we have got to go. We're at the end. They're sending the hook out. So thank you so much for being on the show, Dr. Helvey. And listeners, we have been listening to Dr. Carl Helvey. And check out his book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer. And until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.